Computer on. Television off. VCR on. Modem connected. Phone working. It's time to talk.
And the girls respond to the call. I have a full white shout out.
Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?
I see the gun feeding.
The dogs of radio are on the air. No, I love it. Hi, everybody. Talking Television with Dave White. Back with you live once again after a brief hiatus last week. I am radio's big dog, Dave White himself. And back with me is my loyal assistant, Fido over there, television guru Tim Carmody.
The 5%er, yeah.
The 5%er, woof, woof. All right. You want to be on the program this week, like always, phone number 800-407-KSAV, 800-407-5728. The email address is talk@ksav.org. Last week, we did a show on politics, the impact of television and politics. And I was interested to get the audience's response to it, but I did not. So it tells me that, one, they didn't like it, two, they didn't listen to it, three, they didn't respond to it, or all of the above. If you did not hear it and you know want to, the station was a little late in getting it on the archive page, but it is on the archive page now. So that actually turned out to be part one, and I know that you were biased, Tim, but there was actually some interesting parts to that show. Wouldn't you agree?
Biased? Me?
Yes.
Never. Outspoken, maybe, but never biased.
I mean, I went back. I still love the old Stevenson and Eisenhower ads.
Oh, so did I.
Those are my favorites.
Didn't Stevenson win?
Which time?
Yes.
Next week's program. So, you know, if you get a chance and you listen to last week's, well, I would appreciate your comments. Next week, we are going to be, gave me an idea. It was a couple weeks ago on one of the TV discussion groups, Yesteryearland. I saw a thread of discussion about Saturday morning. They called it Saturday Morning Memories, and this was the old Saturday morning kid shows, cartoon shows. On television, and I started doing some research on that, and as usual, there's a ton of them, far more than I thought or that I remembered, and we're going to have next week as a special guest, a fellow named Gene Hamm, and Gene is a veteran animator. As a matter of fact, he's got a book that's going to come out next year on cartoon animation and animating for television and movies. He has worked for, among others, Hanna-Barbera, such things as On the Smurfs, Yogi Bear, The Super Friends, Gumby, the long, long list. So, one, he's an expert on cartoons and on animation. He runs his own animation company. So you'll be able to not only ask specific questions about, particular shows or particular cartoons, but I'm going to be asking questions about, how in the heck is it done? Who comes up with the ideas and they bring you the idea and who, conjures up the character and puts the whole thing together. So that's going to be next week. And in 2 weeks, my guest is going to be one of the co-authors of the Encyclopedia of TV Game Shows, David Schwartz. And again, here we go. Boy, encyclopedia is the word, too, when you say on TV game shows. There, it looks like the Encyclopedia Britannica, Tim. You know, we think that we remember a few old shows. Holy smokes. And this fellow is a television historian, very knowledgeable. I've seen a lot of people, again, on the discussion groups talk about, you know, game shows and their favorites, and here's your chance to do so. So that'll be in 2 weeks, David Schwartz. It'll be game shows. Let me see. Let me get my schedule out here. On the 25th, I haven't worked out the details yet, but one thing I want to do on that show, Tim, is put together another segment where we do, oh, like 30 minutes or so of old commercials. And I have put together an assortment of car commercials.
And you think, boy,
you think these are boring, but you to go back and see how lengthy, how these things were sold years ago, the themes and the styles. I mean, it's really funny to hear, you know, streamlining and big fins and all of this stuff. And I also have on that show the funniest car ad that was ever made. So that's something I'm putting together for the 25th. And now, after much work, I have had to give up, at least temporarily, my search for an expert and schedule the show anyway, Combat. This has been, I know this was a favorite of yours.
It was.
And
so and locally,
is.
Too.
There has been a lot of demand from listeners. They want this show featured. So we're going to feature it. I have tried to get an expert to come on, and I'm still going to try to, but I haven't as yet. But we're going to do it anyway. That's going to be on November the 1st. So if nothing else, it'll be Tim and I, and hopefully a lot of support from the audience who know these shows, who know Combat. And, you know, here's your chance to call in, and not tonight, but to call in the first, talk about it, your favorite episode. So keep that in mind for November the 1st. And on November the 8th, we are going to be having, not on talk and television, but a KSAV special on The Fugitive. And special hosts that night are going to be two moderators from the Yahoo discussion group, Fugitive News and Reviews. And they will be on for an hour, all of their own. I will butt out. You aren't even going to be allowed in the studio, Tim.
Not even with my 5%?
No, not even 5% on that night. So a busy schedule coming up. You think that I was just goofing off on vacation last week, and that was not the case.
Huh.
All right, emails. I got the, if you remember, what was it, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we had Ken Kessler on, and he gave a gave away a copy of his book.
Right.
And the I just wanted everyone to know I got an email from the winner of the contest, Bill in Chicago, and he said that he received the book and is enjoying it. So Ken was true to his word, and I appreciate getting the email, and I appreciate Ken following through on that. And
congratulations, Bill.
That's yes, that's right. And I know you were one that that wanted that.
Mom called in, and she was pretty disappointed.
We're something we're going to do here. We'll get to in just a couple of minutes. Incidentally, those of you who are tuning in to hear about, you know, tonight's program, which is Stuntman, television Stuntman. My guest is going to be veteran stuntman Bob Hoy. He's going to be on with us in about 12 minutes. So we'll have plenty of time to talk to him, and he is a fellow with a really an extensive resume. Two things that I'm going to bring up, and then we'll talk about current television. I want to have some time put aside and to talk about contemporary shows, and I've got two things real quick here to do. One, Tim, I have broken the Garrison apparatus.
You're
now,
kidding.
For those of you out there who, you know, aren't aware of this, we have a listener. He's a trivia expert, claims to be just one person, Garrison. But we figured out that no one person could know all of this stuff, so it has to be a group. And I have information on that. I'm going to put that aside, and we'll do that in just a moment.
I know he's his group is getting ready to win a prize.
Oh, that's right. We've got another question tonight for that, too. I don't know how this slipped by me, but an alert listener sent me. This is an article off of CNN.com. Man breaks record for watching TV. Friday, September the 16th, New York. Couch potato Suresh Jokum broke the Guinness World Record for the longest time spent watching television. He finished Friday with 69 hours and 48 minutes, passing the previous record of 50 hours and 7 minutes. Yoakam did his TV viewing in the lobby of WABC-TV as part of the Guinness World Record Breaker Week. Sitting on a brown leather couch, he watched nothing but ABC shows. I think he should get credit for...
That should have killed him right there.
Yeah, just for that. Watched ABC shows. Yoakam said, quote, "I'm going to be a little tired of watching TV after this." Let's see. You were allowed a 5-minute break every hour and a 15-minute break every 8 hours. The viewer had to otherwise be constantly looking at the screen. Do you think his eyes might be shaped like TV screens now? Yoakam, who lives in Toronto, now holds more than 16 Guinness World Records. Included in there is the longest duration of balancing on one foot, 76 hours and 40 minutes, and bowling for 100 hours. Now, this means that it's easier to stand on one foot than to watch ABC television continuously sitting on a couch. That I believe.
Can he use any aids like bourbon or anything?
It isn't mentioned in here. But now, do you want to know what motivates him?
No.
He does it to raise awareness of suffering children. Now, I don't know what the connection there is at all, but I'm going to tell you, I think Suresh is suffering a hell of a lot more than any children.
Wonder who his babysitter was when he grew up, CBS, ABC,
NBC? So, anyway, congratulations, Couch Potato, Suresh Yoakam, and I appreciate and I thank the listener for alerting me to that.
I hope he at least wins a recliner.
All right. Before we go to you, Tim, Garrison, I'm going to do this, exposing you here, so to speak, on national programming. But here's what it is. Garrison is an acronym. It is the Global Apparatus for Recording and Relaying Insignificant Statistics, Observations, and News.
Wow. Dave.
And this... they have tentacles everywhere. So beware
the
Garrison apparatus. All right, now we've got about 10 minutes here, 8 or 10 minutes, and I want to devote some time to contemporary shows. For you, Tim, that means new shows.
Oh, so, I got you.
So,
okay.
And also in here, at any time, give us, because we're going to give away another television DVD tonight. I'll go into the vault and see what we have. Give us the Guru's Brain Buster. And for those of you that want to answer the Brain Buster, we do it by email, not over the phone. And the email address is talk@ksav.org. So what do you
ready
got
to go
here?
Okay,
yeah.
Let's start out with one of the most famous facts. 50 years ago, James Dean, a famous actor, died in a fatal smash-up, September 30th, 1955. Now, this is a run-up to our brain teaser.
Okay.
On talking
television, the brain buster.
On talking television, for those that have recorded every one of ours, we once mentioned that James Dean was once part of a stunt factory, that's in quotations, to test stunts that would be given to contestants to try so they could neither be too easy nor too hard. Dean was described as the most coordinated of all the young unknown actors that did this job. What show was that? That's the question.
Okay, that's the brain buster for tonight. And if you know it, you want to win a television DVD, email me the answer.
Okay, now listen, Dave, since current TV is not in your frame of reference, I'm going to try to say that reality show may be waning a little bit. And thank God it's coming into one of my favorites. All our listeners out there have know that the big hit series of last year was called Lost. And that is one that put the other networks on the path to find copies of the supernatural.
How does that work? Because I've never seen that. Surprise.
Okay, imagine Love Boat with supernatural feelings. You get a cast of characters like in Survivor. You put them on an island. This island is either they're all dead. The island is either inhabited by spirits, other people, creatures, monsters. It's a continuing serial that keeps you on the edge of your seat. It is very well done. I'm not making fun of it. It is going to be a cult classic. Lost has put all the elements of terror, the supernatural, a good cast, good acting, good writing, and you never know what's going to be on the next. It's much like that old show, The Prisoner. You never knew exactly what's going on.
What network has this?
I'm going to say Lost is on one of the major networks, and it is on is on ABC.
Okay.
Yes, ABC, Channel 7 here. And,
okay.
The reason I bring this up is because this year we have all the stations have come out with their copies because, again, Lost is a big hit. It is also taking the place of the non-written, non-acted reality shows. So here we go. What do our listeners think of these new shows? And I've watched every one of them because I am enthralled. Okay, on CBS we have Threshold. It's been described as alien weirdness coupled with conspiracies.
Okay, what do you think of it?
I like it. I think
all
it's
right.
going to be a hit.
So we get a thumbs up here from the guru.
Invasion on ABC, more alien conspiracies. I know that there's people out there that'll love that one. That's on ABC.
Do you like that one too?
I give that a medium thumbs up.
Okay.
It's too much of the aliens taking over human bodies a la X-Files. The Supernatural. Now this one on WB has hit all, it has two guys like, I'd say the Hardy Boys, trying to figure out why flaming dead people are pinned to the ceiling.
Well, that can't happen every week.
I was going to say, stuntmen are definitely going to be used in this one. Every time it starts out with, that's why they got interested, because they saw their mother fly into the ceiling with, you know, being flaming. Anyway, it's hard to describe. I think it's going to flop out because it's WB. Ghost Whisperer.
You don't like Warner Brothers?
Let's just say WB sticks to the lame comedies. Supernatural is not their Bollywood.
Okay.
Ghost Whisperer on Fox. You don't need any more description than that. Go see The Sixth Sense. Don't skip this show. Now, here's my favorite, and they ruined it for me. You ready, Dave? Kojak,
okay.
The Night Stalker.
Now, that's been around for a while, hasn't it?
Oh, it was one of the brilliant shows with Darren McGavin wearing those really wrinkled suits and going around investigating really weird stories and doing very good at it. Well, they remade it with a young guy that might be part of a conspiracy, and he's trying to find his long-lost relatives, and it's a dismal copy of the original big hit from the 70s. I give it a thumbs down. They ruined the original.
Is this, now, do you dislike this because, how do I want to say, is this a case where, like, McGavin is so ingrained as the character that nobody could substitute, or they've just kind of ruined the plot?
Well, I could compare it to The Fugitive, and making The Fugitive, instead of running for his life from a crime he didn't commit, looking for his lost sister who went in a spaceship. I mean, in other words, taking the whole idea and changing it around so badly.
So the only thing that's the same is his name is still Kolchak.
Right, and he's working for a newspaper.
Okay.
But again, the FBI is after him, which he wasn't in the original. He's, anyway, accused of doing a murder, but he didn't do it, and we've got everything in there. It's too confused.
Okay, so you like Lost.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you like The Threshold.
Right, and I'm going to bring up something really different for fans out there. There's a movie out now that's a science fiction movie at the regular theaters. This has to do with TV called Serenity. The Serenity is a 2002 television series that flopped. It was so spectacularly unsuccessful that they only made a handful of the episodes. Fox Network canceled it. Now they made it into a movie, and it's grossing big time. It's the number one movie out there. It's a Western in outer space. It's like The Magnificent Seven in a spaceship. And it's going to become a cult classic as a movie.
Well, all right, who'd have thunk it?
Oh, it's big time. But anyway, these type of shows, I think, are replacing the reality, and I think Mark Burnett has got some flops on his hands.
All right, we've got about 1 minute, and I know that you're a big fan of Mark Burnett. Tell me about his flops.
Okay, high-profile failures, among them The Contender for NBC, Boarding House, North Shore, flop. His foray into comedy, Commando Nanny, never even aired on WB. It's true that the Apprentice franchise is showing some signs of audience fatigue, and Martha Stewart version in particular is sinking in the ratings. He also produces her syndicated talk show, which is underperforming. Mark Burnett, ding, 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 down you go.
Oh, in the bonk. You know, will it be a hit thing or a miss bonk? So.
I'm breaking the record now. Mark Burnett will be replaced by Invasion of the Supernatural on all stations.
All right, well, he'll probably get a hat in the ring there somehow. All right, and if anybody wants to comment on any of these shows or you know, whatever, that's fine. Give us a call, 800-407-KSAV. All right, we're going to go to the first break. That will give me a chance to get my guest, Bob Hoy, on. And when we come back, Talkin' Television will take a flying leap. Well, figuratively speaking. Bob Hoy, veteran stuntman and actor, director. Anyway, we don't have time to go down the list, but you stick around. He'll be on with us when we return to Talk Television on Retro Radio.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Tara. I've never been with anything less than a man. So fine, I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone fast with a girl named Bo. But somehow they just don't end up as mine. It's a death-defying life I lead. I take my chances. I die for living in the movies and TV. But the hardest thing I ever do is watch my leading ladies. Some other guy while I'm bandaging my knee. I might fall from a tall building. I might roll a brand new car. Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that made Redford such a star. I've never spent much time in school, but I've taught ladies plenty. It's true, I hire my body out for pay.
Hey, hey,
I've gotten burned over Cheryl Teagues, blown up for Rocky Welch. But when I wind up in the hay, it's only hay.
Hey, hey,
I might jump an open drawbridge or Tarzan from a vine. Cause I'm the unknown stuntman that makes Eastwood look so fine.
Guy, and on with us we have a real fall guy. None of this phony stuff, you know. We've got the real McCoy. With me is Bob Hoy, and Bob, welcome to Talkin' Television and KSAV.
Well, welcome, and thank you, David.
Oh, on with us, because they just you just got on here at the end of that break, is my co-host Tim Carmody.
Hi, Timothy.
Hello there.
And let me give a little summary here for the audience. And, Bob, you have about a 50-year career for me to cover. But you have had a career as an actor, a stuntman, a director. Since we focus on television shows, the audience will probably remember you best as playing Joe Butler on High Chaparral. We're going to talk that about that in more detail in the second segment when you're on. You've also doubled for Charles Bronson, Tony Curtis, Robert Forrester, Ross Martin, Tyrone Power, David Janssen, Telly Savalas, Jay Silverheels. As far as television programs, you've appeared in Wanted, Dead or Alive, Walker, Texas Ranger, Dallas, Wild Wild West, Young Riders, Zorro, you know, it goes on and on here. I could spend the rest of the time here reading the credits and so on that you've done.
Well, I wouldn't do that because I'm getting tired.
am I wearing you out with all
yeah.
this?
Yeah,
better sit out.
Things are flashing across my mind.
In the first part here, I'm going to talk some about being a stuntman or stunt person because let's start out with just that. How did you, get into that line of work? I mean, was this something where you know, you're sitting there at the high school counselor and saying, well, you know, I think I'll go into stunt work. I like falling off of buildings or something. How did you get into it?
No, I don't think today they do that, I believe, because there's so much publicity on stuntmen. No, in my day, if you recall, I was about 19 years of age. I'd just gotten out of the Marine Corps. And what do you do? What do you know? You have no background of anything but what you went through. It didn't work anywhere. You became a man much earlier than your time. And there were a lot of ex-Marines that worked in pictures before they got in the Corps. And they went back to it, then they sort of dragged me along.
So you then met people in the service and kind of had contacts or whatever in the business, so to speak.
Exactly. Some of the great stuntmen in that era. Charlie Horvath was one of them. And Jack Perkins, they were ex-Marine sergeants.
Now, this took place, I guess, in Southern California, in Hollywood.
Exactly.
Okay. Now, you go down there, and you know, some friends say, come on down, you know, I got a little work for you here in the movies, and you're a young guy, I want to pick up some money. Oh, what do? Get up on that horse, and when it comes by, fall off and land on your head over there, and then we give you the $10 when you get up.
And the way it's that way, but that was actually back in the 20s and 30s. Walter Brennan, I'll tell you that story later, told me what he had to do to get a job in those days. But, no, what happens is that I was a horseman, and after the war, I played around in Hollywood. I did a picture or two, but then I went up to Nevada and I cowboyed for a couple of years. Then I came back in the business and did mostly horse work at the beginning.
Okay, I've got a caller on already here that wants to talk to you, Bob. Okay. So let's get him on. This is David from West Virginia. David, you're on Talkin' Television with Dave White and Tim and Bob Hoy.
Hi, Dave. It's good to hear from you guys again.
Oh, well, I'm delighted you called.
What can I do for you, David?
Actually, this wasn't a comment for your guest, Dave. This
is more like a
comment for the entire listeners.
Bob, just so you know, when everything's kind of open for discussion, and if the listeners want to call in on something that's a little off topic, that's allowed on the show too.
Well,
so
good.
Just be patient. Sure, David, you go right ahead.
Okay, stunt work back in the '80s. That's when I grew up, real literally watching television. The stunt work back then was literally done by stuntmen. I can remember two shows in particular. You played the theme to one of them, The Fall Guy and Knight Rider. All the stunt work was done by pretty good stuntmen. As time has gone on, we're seeing more and more actors doing their own stunts.
Who are some examples?
An example is, I guess you could say Chuck Norris, Tom Cruise. These are all movie actors, but
okay. They
all do their their own stunts now.
No.
Okay. All right. You've got the inside track on this Bob. What's your comment?
Let me explain it.
Sure.
Chuck Norris is a friend of mine, and Chuck Norris is a tremendous athlete. Nobody is going to put an actor in jeopardy to have him hurt. Everyone would be out of a job.
Well, if that was the case,
yes, he can do a lot of the same
stop
stuff.
But
he'd do his own vice, and he'd do, you know, those karate things.
Mm-hmm. I guess you'd get down to having to define just what a stunt is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise, you're not going to hurt him. I mean, accidents can happen. The JC factor can come in there when no one knows it, and bang, he breaks a leg. Well, everyone's out of work. So you protect the money is what you do. The star does a lot of it. He'll do the lead up to it. And you don't want to hurt that man. So they can do it themselves, let's say. But you still don't want to take that chance. The stuntman goes in there. He doesn't have to break concentration. He's thinking of one thing only, not two things.
Was this your own observation, or had you heard this, or whatever? What was your source for information on that?
Internet Movie Database, I'm sure you're a frequent visitor.
Uh-huh.
It does a daily entertainment report every day, and then spots there I've read, you know.
Okay.
Tom Cruise was his own stunts. Chuck Norris was doing his own, that kind of thing.
Okay. Well, you know, sometimes that stuff, this isn't a matter of having a debate per se. And also, David, I think that Bob has hit it on the head. That, you know, what some people consider a stunt might be considered, a whole lot less so with others. But, anyway, I appreciate the comment, and I hope that you'll keep listening. We're just getting warmed up here on talking about stunts, and Bob has a lot of interesting stories to tell.
Okay, Dave, it was good to hear from you again.
All right, well, thank you very much. Thanks for calling. You mentioned being Bob being a horseman. So did you specialize then in a particular type of program? Like when you went to Hollywood, did you work mainly in westerns for that reason, or
exactly? It was more work in those days in westerns than there was anything else.
Right. That's what I was going to ask. It was also a matter that that's where the most stunt work existed.
That's right.
What were, you know, everybody gets the, shouldn't say everybody, but people like get the idea of the real dramatic stunts of, you know, the leap in the motorcycle over and so on. But that's really highly uncommon. What would be the common work that a stuntman would do? Again, we'll talk about Western.
One of the most obvious things are the fights.
Okay.
On television or in features. I mean, that's the most common of the stunts. You know, a barroom fight, a karate fight, a sword fight, whatever you have. Those are the common things. But when you go to turning cars over or jumping a horse off a train or getting off a horse and getting on the train yourself when it's moving, those are special stunts to that degree. And you have to have the horse right, you've got to have the cowboy right, the stuntman right, and the situation has to be. We lay everything out before we do it.
Tim, you have a question? You want to follow up on that?
I was just going to say, Bob, did you specialize in, like, you mentioned sword fighting, barroom fighting. What do you think your strongest point in the
well,
early days was?
Actually, all around.
You were actually
yeah,
in the
I slipped away from the horse work and started doing other stuff like car work and high falls, you know, 30, 40 feet.
Let me ask you, in the old days, where did you get good at that? I mean, you couldn't go down the street and practice. Was
no,
there a school or a safe area?
Well, you did it on your own. You went out to the barn and you put up some cardboard boxes, you know, like the Beacons boxes, and taped them all together. And
oh, you're kidding. Really?
No, you're right.
Wow.
They didn't have airbags in those days.
You know? So when you jumped off a building onto a horse, that was really you. That made me cringe as a kid there, Bob.
That did. I did it in the Black Seals of Falls where Dublin Tony Curtis. I came out of the hayloft right to the back of a horse.
Wow. Is that why you can sing higher than the average person?
I limped around for a while. Yeah.
Oh, that must have hurt.
When, what was the most dangerous stunt that you've done?
You know, they all are. You mean the most spectacular one?
Well, I guess, you know, sometimes and it doesn't go by just, you know, how dramatic it looks per se. Because you can get, you know, like you say, seriously injured doing something comparatively simple.
Usually that's what gets the guys.
Yeah.
You know, let me give you a quick example.
Sure.
I started turning to be an actor, and in the sequence was a shot where this actor, or bad guy, gets shot and he goes out backwards out the window. And the director said, "Gee, Bobby, I'm glad you're here because you can do the fall too." And I said, "Well, wait a minute. If you want a bad acting scene and one hell of a fall, I can do it. Now, if you want one hell of an acting scene and a stuntman that breaks a leg or something, you know, that's what would happen. I can't split my concentration."
I see, okay.
So a stuntman will come in, and he can look it all over, and all he has to do is that. He watches me make my move back toward the window, and he picks it up from there. He takes two steps into that same shot, and the editor just cuts them together.
Would you do, like, the stunt first and the actor watching you then?
No.
No, okay.
No, 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 no. You watch the actor lead right up to the stunt.
Okay.
And then you get in and do it.
All right.
Hey, Bob, let me ask you, how much did you have to look like the actor that you fit in?
Very much. Physically, if your body was the same size and height and your build was the same and your face was a little the same and your hair was the same, they could do a few things with makeup if, you know, you were requested by an actor that you didn't look anything like, they make a somewhat of a face mask for you, you know. That's what they do now.
Well, I have seen... Oh, and incidentally, I wanted to tell people, if you want to find out more and see Bob, and he's a good-looking guy, too, go to www.bobhoy.com, all one word, bobhoy.com, real simple. It's a good website. It has some great pictures on there.
Oh, great.
And you're a good-looking guy, Bob. And you know, you look like a horseman. You look like a cowboy. We had a fellow on who worked in Jack Webb's Dragnet,
mm-hmm.
and he said that Jack Webb told him, "You look like cops think they look."
Mm-hmm.
And, Bob, you look like how cowboys think they look.
And so it's
marvelous. I meant to give out that that site. I've got a, I mean, I should have read this before. I've got an email, and incidentally, we've got a winner, two winners, actually, for the that answered our question tonight, so we don't need any more email answers on
Dave
that.
Dave and Garrison.
Did Garrison, yeah, well, he came in with the answer, but he wasn't first. So Mike in Berkeley wins, and the answer was beat the clock. That was the answer to the question tonight.
Oh,
terrific.
But Mike also sent in a question for Bob Hoy. He said, "Bob, you have done stunt work for so many actors. I imagine that some of them were very nice to you and spent time with you, and others didn't make time for that. Can you tell us about some of the nicer people that spent time with you, some memories? Who were your favorites?" I think that's a good question.
My favorites were David Janssen, Tony Curtis, Charlie Bronson, Stuart Whitman, Ross Martin, Jay Silverheels. These are the guys I doubled that were friends.
Mm-hmm.
There was, in my era, stuntmen were not known like they are today, and we liked it that way. We knew, they knew who we were, and we kept our mouths shut. We didn't want any publicity.
Mm-hmm.
But today, some of these young stuntmen are as famous as the actors they double. You know, they're going for the glory of that end of it, which we never did. We went for the making a living and getting our money. They're going for publicity now, and, you know, who can follow farthest and do this and that.
Out of the people that you mentioned, we did a couple of programs on The Fugitive, which, of course, was David Janssen. And I had a fellow on who had worked with him and who knew him, and I asked about him in particular. And he said that David Janssen was really a nice guy, and he was courteous and he was friendly with everybody on the cast. He wasn't aloof.
That's right.
Yeah, and you found that to be the same.
Well, see, I knew David before he got on that. He did a series for Four Star, which was Dick Powell's company. Ida Lupino, Dick Powell, the English actor, and I forget who the Four Stars were at this moment. And he did a show called Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
A cop show. And Mary Tyler Moore was our phone girl. You never saw her at all. All you saw were her legs and her very sexy voice.
Oh,
you know?
I remember that.
You
yeah.
know some of the best parts, though.
Yeah, that was great. She was great in that. You know, and that got her a lot of work later on because of that voice and, of course, of
that's good to hear
talent,
that David
you know.
Janssen was a real gentleman. I like
he
that.
Was a hell of a guy and a good guy, and he just checked out too early.
When, now you appeared on The Fall Guy. You, in fact, you were on that show more than once, weren't you?
Yes, I worked as an actor on it, and whatever there was, I did. Stunt guys take care of stunt guys. I'd just gotten over a broken leg, and I wanted to go back to work. And so the park called for being out in the middle of this road with these motorcycle guys and me trying to duck them. Well, Mickey Gilbert was the stunt coordinator on that show. And I said, "Mick, I'm just limping. I just broke that leg, and I'm back too early." He said, "Don't worry about it, Bobby." And all the guys on the motorcycles were friends of mine, so they would come at me, and they would duck off, and I would just spin and turn on that one good leg. And they got the same effect.
Okay. Now, the Fall Guy was the and incidentally, I've got a caller on the line. I see that, Bill. I'm going to take a break, and we'll get to you as soon as we come back from the break, so please hold on. What did you think, as a real genuine stuntman, Bob, what did you think of the show The Fall Guy and how it portrayed stuntmen? Was it too romantic, or what did you think?
Well, it was very close to, actually, when you saw them out in the when we were shooting the sequences where they did the stunts, because Mickey Gilbert was the stunt coordinator, and he was a hell of a stuntman himself, and he always hired the right guys, and he would teach those actors to do a couple of little lead-ins to the stunt, you know, and they would do it, and with the excellent cutting editing, it looks like they did it. It was realistic to a great degree, but, you know, you see the same two guys every day. You hardly ever see any other stuntmen on that show. You do. I remember they did bring in some other actors as stuntmen.
Well, did you think that Lee Majors' portrayal of a so-called stuntman, was that just, you know, Hollywood and romanticism, or was that any bearing on real life?
Well, it had a bearing on real life. Okay. But remember, we make magic in Hollywood.
Well, that's okay. Yeah. Those of us out here, you know, in the great unwashed, we forget these things. We're going to take a quick time out, listen to a couple of ads for Great American Soup, Pepsi Cola, and when we come back, we'll take the caller Bill, and we're going to talk some about High Chaparral, and that's I know is a favorite of yours, Bob. So everybody stick around. We'll be back real quick on Sharevision Radio.
Boy, am I hungry. What kind of soup is that?
Make way for the Great American Soup.
Can you give me that again?
Off at the Ritz, they pass the word to 42nd Street. Make way for the Great American Soup. Hey, mister, have you tried the soup that's good enough to eat? Shake hands with the Great American Soup. Feel that rhythm, guide your feet on a soupy road to romance. Let's face the chicken gumbo and dance. Who's got its noodles up in life from Broadway to the Loop? It's the Great.
Emily, why do you always have to make such a big production out of everything?
This is the taste. This is the test. Pepsi versus Coke. The Pepsi Challenge.
Pepsi.
And all across America, more people pick Pepsi.
Pepsi.
Time after time after time.
Pepsi Cola.
One more time, it's gonna be Pepsi now. Maybe the taste is Pepsi.
We're on here.
We're playing High Chaparral.
We're talking television. On the radio, the best television on Tuesday night takes place on the radio. KSAV, talking television with Dave White. And that's one of my favorite television theme songs. David Rose, as a matter of fact.
Exactly.
Yes, High Chaparral.
High Chaparral.
Now, we're going to talk in fair detail about High Chaparral, but I don't want to keep my caller on the line. So I've got Bill from Chicago. Welcome to Talkin' Television. I should say welcome back.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Tim.
How are you doing?
I have two things. First of all, I wanted to tell you that I was the contest winner for the Ken Kesler You Watch Too Much TV book. I did get it. It's awesome. It's got like 1,000 different questions in here. So I encourage all your listeners to go out and get that book. It's really neat.
Oh, excellent. Great.
Yeah. Bob, I have a question for you. I took a look at an old combat episode called Crossfire back in November of 65, 40 years ago. And you were a radio operator on that episode. Did you enjoy being an actor, or did you enjoy being a stuntman more? And when they hire you, do they hire you like for a season, or is it just for an episode? How does that work?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll take them one at a time. First of all, Now, I know, Bob, that you remember every appearance on every program and movie you've done in your life specifically. I'm just being facetious here. Bill is a big fan of combat, and we're going to feature that show in a few weeks. But you made one appearance on combat. Do you remember that show at all or being on that one?
Yes, I do.
And you didn't do stunt work on that. You were just an actor.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. And one of Bill was asking is, when you get hired like that, do they hire you for a season, or is it just for the one particular show? Or?
It's usually for one show, unless you're the stunt coordinator and you go along with the whole show.
Okay.
Or a second unit director, you go along with the whole show. And the stunt coordinator will find doubles for his actors. Let's say Cary Grant and Rock Hudson. He'll find two guys their size and that can do things, and they will go along with the show also. But the other nondescript stuntman will come in on a daily basis when a new show comes up, and they say, we need a karate fight here and a turnover a car. And then they'll bring those guys in, give them a couple of days rehearsal, and then they'll do it.
Okay. All right. Bill, does that give you, you know, some idea?
Bill also wanted to know about being an actor and a stuntman.
Okay.
You see, I was one of the first of the guys to go along. Richard Farnsworth was the first. He was the stuntman who won the Canadian Academy Award. He came up through the ranks. Jack Mahoney was another one that did that. Wilfred Brimley is another one who played in Our House. These are guys that worked in the field and worked their way up the ladder. And I was one of them, too. Of course, some of my breaks didn't come, you know, at the right time or what have you. But I was known as an actor and who could do his own stunts. And I did them. And that's how I got on Chaparral.
Okay. Well, that brings us up to what we're going to talk about. So, Bill, I appreciate, as always, you... Listen, I appreciate you calling, and now I want you to get warmed up for that combat show. I know you're anxious for that. Did you hear me announce that? That's going to be on November 1st.
The whole show?
No, we're going to be discussing that.
Oh.
So that'll be our featured program.
Yeah.
Looking forward to it, Dave. Thank you.
All right, Bill. Thanks very much for calling.
Goodbye, Bill.
Bye-bye, Bill.
All right. Hi, Chaparral. Timmy, do you have, give us a few of the details on High Chaparral, the years that it ran.
Favorite show in front of me now, Western, September 10th, 1967 to September 10th, 1971. So 4 good years there.
Right.
Robert Hoy is listed as Joe. You played in the cast as Joe, is that right?
Joe Butler.
Right.
Yeah, and the big John Cannon, the head of it, was Leif Erickson with Cameron Mitchell along his side. And
right.
We also had Linda Crystal, who everybody loved to watch.
Yes, she was beautiful.
Wasn't
and still
she?
Is.
Oh, yeah. And those were some of the stars. And it was a very popular show.
It was a good show because it did what the Lone Ranger did. You know, the Lone Ranger, the reason it ran so long on radio, on television, and features was because the bad guys got it. Couldn't get away with anything. Before that show was over, they got their comeuppance, regardless of what they did.
Good point.
Being mayhem, what have you. And those young minds that sat around the radio or watched the Lone Ranger television could see that. If you do wrong, this is what's going to happen to you. Today, it's different. They tell you to go do wrong, it looks like, for those kids.
Well, now, the as far as I could tell, the cast on High Chaparral was very stable. That really didn't change over the run of the show, did it?
No, we were a hell of a family. There was no jealousies, and there was a lot of fooling around and having fun. And we had a good production manager by the name of Kent McCrae, who in essence became Michael Landon's producer in Little House and all the shows that Michael did. We had great directors, Bill Claxton, who was our producer-director, and David Dorkart, of course, who also produced Bonanza.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up, that it was the same producer, I guess be the right word, that did Bonanza. Was High Chaparral, do you consider that to be kind of a knockoff from Bonanza?
No way.
Okay. What was the difference?
What the difference was... And after the first year of Bonanza, you didn't see any more cattle. You saw four men living in a wooden log cabin house. High Chaparral was more of based on some history in Arizona, on the Kitchen family, and they're struggling with the Indians in those days. We showed that part of the Indian life. We showed more things in Chaparral, than Bonanza ever did. Though Bonanza was my break, I did about four or five Bonanzas, and David Dortart called my agent and said, we want Bobby to do this this High Chaparral thing.
Yeah, I noticed that you had several appearances in Bonanza, so that was prior to, that was what led you to be cast in High Chaparral then.
Exactly.
Ah.
Exactly. And I didn't do much the first year. We did the pilot, and I did a couple of stunts and fought with the bad guys and did a fall off the roof as a nondescript bad guy. But from then on, after that, David said, I don't want you doing any more stunts. So what we would do is the last show of every season, I would do a stunt for them.
Oh, so in case something happened, you'd have the off season to recover.
Right, right.
They're so considerate. I'd like to work for these guys, wouldn't you, Tim? They care.
I would, yes. Don't fall off until the end of the season.
Yeah. Right, whatever you do.
Was that shot in studio, or was that more outdoors?
It was shot in Tucson, Arizona, in the old Tucson area. And we'd go down there for 2 weeks, and we'd do a lot of the exteriors for maybe two or three shows, and we'd come back to Paramount for 2 weeks, and then we'd go back to Arizona for two or three weeks, and that's how it worked.
I remember it had much more of a look of actually outdoors, like the movie westerns than Bonanza did.
And we had 3,000 head of cattle in the pilot.
Real cows?
Yeah.
They weren't stunt cows, were they?
No, they were black and white-faced cattle.
Wow.
You have Bonanza. Bonanza took on, and this is fine, but was different in that it took on, I'm going to say, social issues, and in that vein, kind of lost. I think Tim would agree with me here. Lost its authenticity as from a historical perspective.
Exactly.
You would agree with that?
I will agree with that.
High Chaparral, then, was, you felt, was much more authentic. This was what real cowboys did. This was what life was like at that time.
Exactly.
And more history, like Bob said, there was the Indians, the Mexicans, the whole unsettled...
The Comancheros, the bad guys.
The Comancheros, right.
Right, and they always got their comeuppance, or a deal was made with, don't go back in Indian country, and we'd go back in and they'd catch us and we'd talk,
Right.
But we had Cochise's great-grandson on the show. Nino Cochise, yeah.
Oh, sure.
And then something went wrong one day, and he turned to me and he says, well, they'll blame it on the Indians. I said, come on, Nino. We're sitting in this van right now. How are they going to blame it on the Indians?
Well, do you remember a favorite episode from High Chaparral?
Yeah, the one I liked the best. Not the one that I did and they made me the foreman of the ranch. I liked that. But the one I liked the best was Don Collier and I played brothers. And Don Collier was a show called Follow Your Heart. But the name of the show was, before they put all that political correctness, which helped hurt our show, was To Kill a Man was the title of it. We had to change that to Follow Your Heart, where he and I go back to where we grew up, and we see our father there, and things like that. So that was a very good show, because there was a lot of drama in that, and a lot of emotion on Don's part, and mine.
Oh, good.
When you were in Bonanza, did you do stunt work or acting mainly in Bonanza?
Actually, when I did Bonanza, I did a lot of stunt work. And in those days, they never let stuntmen get credit, which I loved.
Okay.
Because I could work on the show, pull my hat down when they said action, and come back next week and do something on the show. You know what I mean? So we were so clever, we stuntmen. We know when the camera's rolling and which way to look. Because you always look away from the camera.
Okay.
So you don't get photographs, and they can't use you when they get to Dodge City, see? Because we saw you in Carson City. How come he's at, things like that?
Then when you went to High Chaparral, then, except for the pilot, you didn't do stunt work then. You were, yeah. As a serious actor.
Right. I did all my own riding, though. That was it.
Which did you, so you mean a lot of these actors wouldn't even, ride the horse on some of these shows?
A lot of them couldn't spell horse. But see, there was no foul on that, and I backed the actor's side. They're actors. They come out here to do a scene.
Well, this is just ignorance on my part, and I think for a lot of us in the audience that, you know, you just assume that you know, that these actors, if they're doing these, are doing it. And I guess it's kind of naive on my part.
Well, no. See, it's so smart. The best-looking cowboys, you know, were Jimmy Stewart,
John Wayne.
Well, John did a lot of his own stuff, but all we tell these actors is how to get on a horse, and we teach them that, how to get on and look like they know what they're doing and how to get off. And then we put the stuntman in between the riding, in between the getting on and the getting off. And they look so great getting on and so great getting off. And you know, but for them, I mean, they've got two pages of dialogue, and they've got to have that correct.
Oh, okay, well, I'm not trying to pick on them. These are you know, differences that I think the majority of us just don't realize.
Well, that's good too, because see, when we used to keep everything a secret, now they show you how stuntmen work. Now they show you the explosions and the squibs and things. We never did all that.
No, but I'll tell you, to me, you know, watching people do stunt work, people like yourself, somebody that's good, it's like anything else. You see them do it, and it looks easy. I'm reminded when I see, you know, somebody take a tumble off a horse or whatever, and they just bounce and get up and go on. It doesn't look very serious. It reminds me of, like, wrestling. Wrestling is just a big show, and, you know, I mean, they're putting on a performance and whatever, but if anybody thinks that you can have one of these guys pick you up and lift you over his head and throw you and you bounce about four or five times, mm-hmm. and that doesn't hurt, they need to go try it once, and I think that mm-hmm. would be, you know, all it would take. And that's the same thing with, you know, watching you and people like you do these things. It just... You know, it just doesn't look severe. You roll over the hood of a car and you get up and dust off the knees, your pants, and well, that's all done.
Yeah, but you know, today they have so much advantage that we didn't have. They have airbags. Well, you can fall from a higher.
Oh, okay.
That's number one. Number two, they've got cages that are stronger that they put in cars now for the driver. You know?
Did you do any work, any stunt work with automobiles?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah, we've turned them over, we've done them all, the skids, the slides, we never talked about that.
How about the fire stunts, Bob?
I didn't really do many of those, to be honest with you. I didn't relish it, and as I always told those young stuntmen, if something bothers you, don't do it.
Good,
you follow me?
Know.
Don't hire yourself out to get you killed and the guy next to you.
Now, you mentioned, like, the earlier one time when you came back too soon because you had a broken leg. I was going to ask, one, if you had ever been injured. Maybe I should say, how often did you get injured?
Well, not often, not that much. Usually, most of the breaks come with working with animals, like with horses, because at that one split second going from a horse to the train, many things can happen. The horse can fall down. The ones in front of you can fall down. I got hurt, my horse, up in Aspen, Colorado in 49. I broke a leg. By the way, you could have bought the town charter for $5,000 then. I should have said it.
Yeah, well, yes. We all know what we should have done.
Right. As the Marines say, I should have stayed out of that slop shoot and spent that money to...
Bob, how did you stay in shape in those days? I know you're an ex-Marine and probably an athlete, but did you have to work out extra hard to
No, just I know I would always limber up and do more stretching than anything in those days, because that's the sort of the key, you know.
Limbering up and stretching, getting ready, yeah.
Yeah, and tumbling a lot.
Okay.
But some great guys that I wish we could have time to mention that I doubled, Noel Berry Jr., Pidge Berry.
Oh, yeah.
What a great guy. Friend Walter Brennan was a buddy of mine. He told me a story. He said, the first guy down to San Diego gets the job. This was in the 20s. So he got down there first, and the job was to drive this old Model T Ford off the end of the pier for $25, and he had a dummy next to him in the car. So he went off the pier, and just as they hit the apex of the jump, the hat came off the dummy. And he crashed into the water, and the director says, go get those guy, that guy out of the water, get another car, and nail a hat on the other dummy. That was Walter's big break in the film industry.
Oh, that's great.
Well, you have to really want it. I'm going to take our next break, and I'll tell you, when we come back, I'm going to ask you about a stunt that I saw a picture of on your website, and because it was one that impressed me. If you want to call in and ask some questions of Bob Hoy, do so, 800-407-5728. This is a chance to talk to somebody that with first-hand experience in a lot of shows, who knew a lot of your favorite stars, and we work hard to get them on here. Don't let the opportunity go by. We're going to be back for another half hour after a quick timeout when we continue to talk television on Retro Radio.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Tuxedo Shop Tux Renter.
Mr. Tuxedo Shop Tux Renter.
When the evening calls for five groomsmen in identical robin's egg blue double-breasteds, you are there.
It's your wedding day.
Last night, little Jason Weinstein had the slow dance of his life in the exact same pants I'm now wearing.
Lucky Jason Weinstein.
Any schmo can wear a suit, but only a gentleman can pull off a canary yellow set of tails with a matching top hat.
Your style.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Titan of the Tux, because a classy event always, always calls for rented clothes.
Mr. Tuxedo Shop Tux Ranger.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Fort Collins, Colorado.
American Chocolate Bar.
This one is from a show called Simon and Simon, these themes, and I chose some that you had appeared on. And boy, if we were just going to do the theme songs for all the shows that you've appeared on, Bob, be some Felony Squad, The Virginian, Mission Impossible, Cannon, Streets of San Francisco. I want to ask about, and if anybody in the audience, you have a question, email me, talk@ksav.org, or give me a call. On your website, www.bobhoy.com, there are pictures of you performing many stunts, and the one that caught my eye is your swinging from like a net from a helicopter, and you have just, you've been out on the wing of this plane, a biplane, and you've walked out on the wing of the plane, and now you're hanging from this net, and I'll tell you, I would have been scared to walk out on the wing of that plane if it was sitting on the ground.
Well, it scares me. It scares me. Not then, now.
Okay.
When I look back on it. Yeah, it was a show called Choke Canyon. And Steve Collins was the lead in it. And Chuck Bale was a stuntman who did a lot of the... Gumball Rally. Remember that cross-country race car
show?
Oh,
sure, yeah.
And Chuck did that thing. We were up in the canyon in Moab, Utah, shooting that.
So that wasn't one of your favorite stunts, then?
No.
Okay. You had mentioned, as far as you know, I asked about the most dangerous stunt, and on your website you had mentioned one, and this struck me because I don't think the public would have felt that this was so dangerous. But you, I'm not disputing it, but you said that one of the most dangerous was coming down this river on a raft. In fact, you and Ivan Dixon, I believe.
Yeah, no, we weren't in a raft. We were chained together. Ivan Dixon and I came down in a show called The Defiant Ones. I was Devlin Tony, and he was Devlin Sidney Poitier. And,
oh, so you weren't riding anything?
No. We were just in, we were passengers, actually, in the rapids.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, it was tricky. It was tricky.
You weren't handcuffed together like the movie pair, were you?
Well, yes. No, we held the chain.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that to anybody.
Okay. But Ivan Dixon played was one of Hogan's heroes.
That's right. He was a radio operator.
Yeah, Sergeant Kinslow.
Yeah.
Yes. So did he do much stunt work?
No, that was the first stunt he did, and after that he said, Bobby, I'm going to go be
that was
an
the
actor.
Last stunt he did as well, huh?
Yeah, but he had a lot of go-ahead. I was amazed. You know, we did the thing off the train. We did the thing in the irrigation ditch or the construction ditch, and we did it coming through the window, chained together there.
So he had enough.
Yeah, he had enough. And he said, anyway, that was a tough stunt because you're a passenger. There's not much you can do.
Okay, I didn't realize when I read that you weren't riding anything but yourself.
No, just us, and we were up in Kernville, California.
Oh, is that where that was done?
Right,
oh.
In April. So when the snow would melt in the mountains around 11 o'clock, that river would get faster.
Wow.
Yeah.
I had a listener who is a big fan of Have Gun, Will Travel, and you appeared on that program as well.
Yeah.
Did you know Richard Boone?
I knew him very well. I met him on a show called Away All Boats we made in the middle 50s. And Richard, it was about an attack transport, and we were down in St. John's, St. Thomas Island, and Vieques Island, and Dick and I became very close on that show because we'd have dinner together and we'd drink a little and just enough and
no,
and we were friends all, and he called me to do that show, Have Gun, Will Travel.
He was another one that we've had some people on who, you know, met him, but not professionally per se, mm-hmm. but found him to be a very, very pleasant individual. And again, someone willing to take time and just talk to people.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you would agree with that. Was he,
100%.
You know, he was a tough-looking guy. I mean, the appearance, physically. He looked the role of a rugged-looking guy.
He was also.
Would he do, again, we talked about guys that, you know, couldn't spell horse or whatever. How was he as far as getting off going on the show?
Good. He was good. He did most of his own riding.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't on the horse that much, if you remember.
No, but yeah. at least he could.
Yeah.
So that we don't get, I've got some other actors I want to bring up as well, but I want to give you a chance, make sure you have plenty of time, Bob. You wanted to talk about the difference between what I'll call modern-day or current stuntmen and people from your era. So
right.
You go ahead and say what you will on that.
Right. I think that the boys today, and I know them, I'm still a member of the Stuntman's Association, and I was one of the founding members, and the organization is going good. But the times have changed, and they're getting a lot of publicity, and they're giving everything away. But what it is they have more advantage to doing things than we did. We did it all physically ourselves. They have ascenders and descenders now. Take them up, 10 stories, 20 stories, or bring them down right to the ground, like an elevator with all the doors missing. We didn't have those things in our day. Only thing, we were just starting all that. We had a ratchet. You would take a guy, the ratchet, and it would slow you down. But you take him off a horse instead of a dead man tied just around your waist and down you'd go. The ratchet would soften you back and when you did the fall. But they have more advantage today, these guys. And also with the advent of television to the extent of the technical end of it, I think stuntmen are going to be out of a job here pretty quick.
Yeah, in other words, they're able to simulate, I'm going to say, maybe electronically, if that's the word.
Yes.
Things, yeah, you would agree that you used to have to do for real.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you see the, well, I doubt I could be too tough on them, but you see them as not appreciating that it's gotten easier and just not having the same ruggedness that you had in the old days.
No, even some of the guys say, how did you guys do it in those days?
Yeah,
how did
well,
you fall the 60 feet, and things like that? So at least we do get the respect from the younger guys. But they're doing things now that, to me, border on the daredevil. And we wanted no daredevilry in our organization.
Well, I think there was with you hanging from the helicopter.
No, I had a gimmick on it. I had a hook that I hooked onto it. Once I got on the ball, I hooked it on. So in case anything happened.
Yeah, well, okay. I'll take your word for it. When you would be doing, for example, it can be either a movie or a TV show, but would you? How do I want to phrase this? As we watch the movie or the scene progress, you see people getting shot off of a horse, a cowboy or a soldier or somebody, and as you're watching the scene, first this one goes down, then that one goes down, then this one. Is that you or others doing the same thing over and over and over again?
No. Let me give you a quick example.
Okay.
I did Indians for a long time in the old days, and I'd be riding down here, and the director would say, okay, Bobby, now when you get to this point, they're shooting at you, you do a fall off that horse, and I'd do that. The next day I'd get out there and the director would say, Bobby, get on that cavalry horse and you're running down this road and you shoot it. You start shooting out in front of you. I said, okay. And when they hooked it together, I shot myself off the horse. You know? Because you don't know at that time that that's happening, because by the time the editor gets it and the director says, well, here's the piece, put that in, he shot the Indian or the bad guy, whatever.
Okay. All right, but if they were doing a movie that called for different shots of guys falling off a horse, you wouldn't get up and get back on the horse and then they pretend.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
God. Oh, sure, yeah.
You'd okay, that's kind of what I meant then.
When,
so
we did the same thing in the Audie Murphy thing, the hell and back. I'd have a German uniform on over an American uniform, fall off the tank and then take the German uniform off and get machine gunned as an American soldier.
Boy, playing both sides. Boy.
Yeah, right.
Literally. You tell us about Audie Murphy. You knew him.
Great guy. You know, I mean, American. He had more medals than anyone in the history of the United States, and he had to give a lot of them back. He had to give the Russian medals back and whatever, because they didn't want him wearing the Russian medals, because we were, after the war, we weren't friendly with the Russians.
Right.
But he has the Croix de Guerre, the Medal Militaire from the French and the Italians, and he's got everything. And he was a good guy. He was a man. He'd stick up for you. I worked his pilot called, I forget what the name of it was, a Western pilot, and I said to him in makeup a couple of days later, hey, I heard you own that company, Murphy. He said, yeah. I said, well, they didn't pay me. Well, man, he went down to that front office, and I got phone calls that afternoon. Bob, we screwed up on that check of yours.
Yeah, they screwed up all right.
You know? Homer squared that away right away.
Well, I'm glad that he did it. It's a shame that, you know, things come to that, if
right.
You will.
He was a great guy. Howard Duff was a wonderful man. I see you got Peter Gunn. He was a great guy, and Blake Edwards was great. Did you ever see the Western, the great, what was that one with Tony Curtis and the great, the big fight we had in the barroom?
Was this a movie or TV?
Yeah, a movie.
A movie?
Nope. Boy, Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, Natalie Wood, The Great Race.
Oh, okay.
Remember that great picture?
Well, I you know, here we are concentrate more on television, but you've got so many of them that you can, you know, can talk about, and of course you're free to bring up any that you want. One show that I was going to do in the future that I want to kind of work in was M Squad. Mm-hmm. And this, you were on M Squad too.
Yeah, and that was Lee's show.
Lee Marvin, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, anything you remember particular about that or about Lee Marvin?
Yeah, I remember. Oh, well, first of all, Lee and I were very close. But I was on an airplane going to Mexico for a vacation, and he was on the same plane. And he said to me, let's get together when we get to. And I said, okay. And I said, he's going to be out Sinatra on the yacht and all that stuff. And by God, he came over and he said, let's get together. And I said, okay. So we got together. We had a good time. And Lee put some money out, like $200, and the waiter never came back with it. So I said, I'll get the money for you, Lee. I went up to the manager, and I said, look, I'm with 20th Century Fox, and I'm here with Mr. Marvin. And we gave your waiter the $200, and there's no change back here. So before I got back to the table, the money was there. You know, and Lee says, how'd you do it, you son of a gun? But, yeah, he was a good actor, a good guy. And
now, he was another fellow who...
He was a Marine, and he was buried in Arlington. He was a PFC in the Marine Corps.
I was gonna say that, you know, he played the part in general as, you know, a tough guy. He certainly played some parts as a particularly vicious guy. Liberty Valance is one that comes to mind. And in the movie The Comancheros, he was a less than likable fellow.
Yes.
And yet these are you know, how is it that
but
somebody
he played
can just...
in Cat Ballou, and he played comedy parts, too.
Yes, he was very
really
good at that.
Good.
Yeah.
I would say how they can kind of turn this on and off if you can. I think that's remarkable.
It's sense memory, you know, it's one thing. It's how you feel. You put yourself into that. He was just a fabulous guy. He had a couple of series, you know, Universal there, and one was M Squad. Was it M Squad?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, that was one that
he was in Mexico. I forgot to tell you the end of it. He was in Mexico, and his hotel room was robbed. So they called the Mexican police in Acapulco, and they kept looking at Lee and back and forth talking, et cetera, et cetera. And then the captain said, to talk to Mr. Marvin on the side. He said, you can help us solve this because we watch you on M Squad. It's true. They told me I can believe it.
Oh, this is excellent, Bob. When do you? I guess this is so from what you said earlier. Are you in? If you don't mind saying, in your own life, were you a rugged guy? Were you a hunter, an outdoorsman, or what was your personal interest?
I went to Parris Island, South Carolina, in the Marine Corps. That's enough to let you know.
Okay,
it's the same thing. Yes, I did all those. I when I was younger, I hunted, you know, and I would shoot over the deer, though.
Well, I know a lot of guys that do that. They're just not trying to. That's all.
And I'm a member of the NRA, so
because seeing your pictures, like I mentioned, you're just such a natural that anybody that, you know, would see you would just say, oh boy, there's a guy that, you know, hikes 20 miles a day or whatever. Just, you know,
that's true. I just kept limber. You didn't have to overdo it. You know, I used to play a lot of volleyball and stuff like that.
I think for you know, you mentioned like the tumbling and so on. Acrobatics is more important. You don't need big muscles and be muscle bound. You need to be you're right, limber and acrobatic to do this kind of work.
But also, you have to blueprint an original. In other words, you have to make it look like it was real, like a car wreck. You follow me? Or fall from a building. You can't automatically. A lot of guys will get caught up there, and they know that they left their perch wrong, and they'll revert back to a tumbler.
Oh,
instead
okay.
of getting shot and reaching up in your chest and falling backwards. You follow me?
Okay.
Things like that.
But
let me talk about some of our girls. You know,
all right, go right ahead.
Wonder Woman. I did a lot of those Wonder Women.
I saw you listed on that. You don't look like Linda Carter. No, you didn't double for her.
The Epper family, Jeannie Epper's doubled Wonderful Woman. I forget her name. I just saw her the other night. And our girls were great, you know. They were doing men's work, and they were just coming to their own in that era, because we used to double women. I used to double Abby Lane. Do you remember Abby Lane?
You did?
Yeah, I doubled her in a picture called, I forget what the hell the name of it was. It Universal?
Well, she must have been flattered.
Oh, well, it was a great shot of her and I in Oh, yeah, we look like sisters. I had the wig on and the dress and the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
You know, but now you can't do that. You had to bring the women in. Which is okay, too.
Was there many women stunt people in your early days?
There were some great women stunt in that era. Polly Burson was one. She was an all-around champion trick rider. She rode in the garden, you know, Madison Square Garden for the big rodeo. She was a hell of a horseman. Marilyn Monroe's double. I did a picture call with Marilyn called Up in Canada. What the hell was the name of it? River of No Return.
Oh, boy, a real thriller. Yeah,
with Mitchum and the kid.
How would you, what suggestions could you offer? If there are people in the audience, if there are people that think this is interesting work and a way to break in and they'd like to do it, how would they go about, you know, auditioning or getting into this?
Did you say
it's different now. It's all a business, you know. You've got to know somebody to get in. You either have to be a known athlete from some aspect, be it football or be it the circus, you know, like a flyer. That opens a lot of doors. And once you get in there, there are people that did what you did, you know, in the business. We have a lot of circus people in our business.
Is this an occupation that a lot of people want to get into? I mean, are there a lot of people, you know,
they are, because they think the money is so great. The minute they did all this advertising, people about stuntmen, the people were calling from all over. East Cupcake, Iowa, coming down. How do I get in and whatever? Because they see it in the movies. And
how was the money like years ago when you were breaking? Was the money worthwhile?
Yeah, it was more than the average guy would make working for Prudential Life Insurance. You know.
Uh huh. So more exciting too.
Right, and it was always different. I mean, I've traveled halfway around the world on features.
There were more attractions to it though than just the money.
Oh God, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, let me take my last time out, Bob. Okay. When we come back, you did some directing, too. And if you'd like, we'll talk a little bit about your directing career. Might as well round it all out. So let's take a last time out, a couple of quick ads. One of them is a classic for Chevrolet, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Then we'll come back and wrap things up on Talkin' Television and Retro Radio.
When there's no man around, Goodyear should be. Why? Watch this. Goodyear Double Eagle carries its own spare inside. Lifeguard safety spare. A tire in a tire. Keeps on going. Give her a second chance. Next time. New Double Eagle with optional lifeguard safety spare.
In the years that I've been living, a lot of things have surely changed. A lot of things have come and gone. Some even came back again. But through all the many changes, some things are for sure. And you know that mighty fine feeling kind of makes me feel secure. Because I love baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. Baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet. They go together.
In case you're wondering, this message is brought to you by baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and America's favorite car.
All right, going to wrap up Talking Television with Dave White. Timmy, what's that theme song we're listening to now?
Oh, that's so famous I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, I know. I even sent them to you this week. You're a disgrace.
Impossible?
The Mod Squad.
Oh, I did.
And Bob, surprise, surprise, you were on the Mod Squad as well.
Yes, I did a couple of those, right. Yeah.
We could make a shorter list of shows you haven't been on, I think. Let's talk about your directing career, because you did, besides being an actor, stuntman, etc., you were a director as well. Talk a bit about that.
Well, I directed in Spain. There was an American Family Films had a show over there called Zorro. Wow. And I was over there as a guest star, and the second unit director quit the show. So the producer said, would you stay, Bobby, and be our second unit director? And second unit usually is the action unit, you know, the stunts.
Okay.
Would you direct that, and etc.? And I stayed there and did that. And I directed a couple of scenes from the first unit when the director didn't know what he was doing. They'd ask me, Bobby, would you do this? And I said, okay. A director, yeah. Not the producer director.
How did you like directing? Did that appeal to you?
Yes, it did.
I know that the, frequently, you know, it's something new and a challenge, and I think when people are successful and they've proven that they can do, you know, one particular aspect of it, they like to go on to a new challenge.
Right, but, you know, some of these young directors, let me give you a quick example. We were at MGM having lunch and going back to Fox, and the director said, "Stop the car." And the guy stopped the car, and he jumped down. And he said, "Bobby, come out here. You look up there. See that high-rise building?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "Can you do a fall off the top of that?" Now, that's like 32 stories. And I said, "Wait a second." And I walked around the car looking up in the air, and I say, "There's not enough room up on top." He says, "What do you mean there's not enough room on top? They got a garden thing up there with swimming pool." I said, "There's not enough room for the 500 guys to get up there and push me off."
Oh, I'm gonna write some of these down. These are good lines.
Well, these actually happened.
They're still good lines.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at you, and I don't know how I missed this the first time. I'm looking here at your at the bio and the mentions. In fact, I might have read some of these. People that you've doubled for, and I mentioned Bronson and Curtis and David Jansen, Silverheels.
Yeah.
But here it is, right there, Abby Lane. Why didn't I catch on here to the check. Abby Lane?
Check the script, right?
Yeah, check the script is right.
Yeah.
Listen, what else? Any other people? Any other stories? I don't need questions here. This is going to be a talking television.
Denver Powell was a friend of mine, and he also did Audie Murphy's life story, The Hell and Back. And, of course, Jimmy Best, who was on it, Jimmy, we all started together here, you know. But Mike Priest did Texas Rangers, and he did like every other Dallas for years. And another good director who worked his way up. He was a script boy at the beginning of his career, you know. There were some great guys. Virgil Vogel, who did The Streets of San Francisco, and did the first, I worked on his first movie called The Mole People.
Oh, the mole people.
Mole men or mole people, whatever. And Doug McClure, who did The Virginian, was a swell guy, you know? Just a great man. And, of course, Howard Duff. I doubled Howard on a show called Dante's Inferno. I don't know if you didn't see that on the list.
Yeah, sure. Dante's Inferno was an old one where he ran a bar, wasn't it?
That's right. He ran a restaurant, but whatever.
Why would you know about that?
Right.
What about our Bill Conrad? Now, he was famous as Cannon, and he was really a favorite of mine. He was a part of The Fugitive as well. You knew
he was a fighter pilot in World War II. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I saw Bill just before he died at the Sherman Oaks Hospital up here.
Wow.
He was a great guy. He became the head of Warner Brothers, and we were doing this thing called First to Fight, a movie that back in the 50s, and he came down with two guys behind him, looked like the general and two aides, and he said, "Bobby, how come you been here a week and you haven't come up to see me?" And I said, "Well, Bill, you're a big man now." He said, "Don't make fun of my size." And I said, no, you're a big man. You're the head of Warner Brothers. So he was a great guy, and he was great in Mark Hellinger's... the picture they made a remake of it, The Killers, he and Charles McGraw.
Oh, yes, I like that one.
That was a terrific one.
Charles McGraw was the other heavy with him, and also a buddy of mine, and I doubled Charlie in a lot of those shows he was in.
That was Burt Lancaster's really first big movie, wasn't it, The Killer?
Exactly.
Yeah. Hemingway story.
And right? I know in the remake, Ronald Reagan played that, and in fact, it was the only time Reagan played a heavy. And
the
he didn't like
time
it.
He was a bad guy, right?
Yeah, and at least before he went into politics,
well,
anyway.
It proves that you can be a bad guy and be president of the United States and be a good guy.
That was his last role. It's really sad, Bob, to me, and I know it is to you, especially since you knew all these people, to you know, have to talk about them all in the past tense. And
yeah,
it seems like every day that goes by, we read about more and more Don Adams, one of the most recent.
Yeah, I did this couple. I did the original pilot of Get Smart.
Is that
black
right?
And white, yeah.
Well, listen, I hear my theme coming on.
Let me just give you a quick thing, synopsis of our business. You know what it is? It's memories, friends, and 8x10s.
You know, that's not just your business. That's the synopsis of life.
Right.
And it really is. Bob Point, thanks very, very much. I'm out of time, but I mean it. Thanks for taking the time to come on and share this. I love that. This is one of the most fun programs I've done.
Thanks.
Real pleasure, Bob.
Thanks, Dave. Timothy, take care. Call me.
All right. I will certainly do so. We'll set something up again. Tim, thanks a lot, as always. I'm just out of time and got to go. Sidewalks of San Francisco coming up next. And next week, Saturday morning, Memories on Tuesday night. Be here. We'll do it all again, talking television on Retro Radio. Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out? Who let the dogs out?